Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment.
And the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. My name is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hottie, Mr. Broussard, if you're feeling a little tired, y'all. You know, so Lindsay had me on this run today.
We ran 1 mile. Our time was 9 minutes. In 4 seconds. First of all, I average a smooth 8 minutes and 5 seconds. I'm trying to get a sub 8. You're not that tired.
That's not the point. The point is that COVID-19 is actually happening as we speak, and I have a pre-existing condition. And that's really what, so you've made me more susceptible by making me run.
Ooh, I'm sorry about your respiratory system. Oh, wow. But I'm also surprised you said tired, because my word would have been overwhelmed. So let's just slide into these updates. So y'all know, I'm trying to give you a visual to explain how I'm feeling. You guys are familiar with social media. Do you guys remember that GIF, sometimes they put it as a picture of, like, I'm about to pull it up so I can describe it. That dog with the top hat just sitting on a table. Like, it looks like he's in, like, a house or a restaurant that's on fire. And there's smoke at the top. And he's like, this is fine. That is a very fair depiction of my life right now. I'm not on fire, but I'm surrounded by fire right now.
Not yet.
And I just have to say that I'm fine. That's it.
Oh my goodness.
That's my update.
Well, we appreciate you. And you know, I really do have to say, shout out to all the educators out there.
We are not okay.
But for real though. And like, although I'm laughing, like with a sincere heart, I think that a lot of what's happening right now, and I don't think that people are talking about this enough, is this is the first time, like literally educators who have been in the profession for 30 years and less, like literally are experiencing something that they have never experienced before. And so I think that there's like not enough being done to truly appreciate you all. So thank you all for what you do. Like I literally have educators who are in DC, Virginia, Maryland, California, and they're like really just trying to just find someone to talk to because they don't get it. And the thing is like, I really do like, I don't know if there are any leadership individuals who are on their administration teams at their schools, please, 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 I can't say this enough. Listen to your teachers. Ensure that your teachers are the first voice that you are thinking about. Yes. Because I think that oftentimes what happens is that there are the leaders who are making the decisions and controlling like the policies and procedures that are being put in place without consulting teachers to figure out like what the best practice is going to be.
Yes.
And that doesn't make sense because who does the work? Who's fighting on the front line day in and day out? It ain't the leaders.
It's really not
that regard.
Not in that regard. I'm not saying they're not doing nothing, but
exactly.
It's a lot going on, y'all. It's a lot going on. We are not okay.
Exactly.
So we're going to lead into our segments. We're actually going to highlight one segment because it's very special and near and dear to my heart. We love the kids.
Yes, we do.
Yes, indeed we do. So today I received a FaceTime call from one of my students. He's actually a twin, so I got a call from the twin as well. They so funny. They really just called because clearly they wanted to call somebody. The one of the twins had just woke up. And he's like, hey, your teacher on the phone. You're the one that want to call your teacher. Come talk to your teacher. I'm like, it's really okay. Like, it's really okay. I'm like, what you been doing? Oh, I just woke up. I said, it's 1:09. You just woke up? He's like, yeah, I couldn't sleep last night. And I'm like, oh, that's fair. And then I asked the kid that I currently teach when he came back to the screen. I'm like, oh, do you miss your friends? No, I don't miss them. I'm like, well, dang. It's been 2 weeks. And the other one's like, yeah, I miss being in school and doing my work and like thinking about what I would be doing right now. And I'm like, wow, we are on the same level because I too am thinking about what I could be doing right now.
Right.
Or what I could be doing at 5 p.m. on a Friday. But anyways, then the other one went out the room. I'm like, where is he going? Like, oh, he cooking. I'm like, oh, y'all cooking? What are y'all cooking? I mean, they're in fifth grade, but I'm like, what are you cooking?
Right.
I know you. I know you know you. He's like, yeah, I was cooking a grilled cheese. I was like, well, if you don't have the grilled cheese now, shouldn't you be in the kitchen with it? And he's like, Well, no, it's going to take a long time. Like, don't worry about it. The bread we got just take a long time. I'm like, okay, child. So then he goes back in there. And then I'm like, oh, where's the older sister? Because I know the older sister, we have a really great relationship. Aww. She said, come say hi to me all the time. I just love her. She got good energy. And then he flips the camera to her like, oh, she's asleep too. And I'm like, all right, it's just too late for y'all to be asleep. But what else are y'all going to do? What else are we going to do?
For the day?
I'm like, oh, where's mom? Tell mom I say hi. Oh, she knocked out. I'm tired of her. So then the other one comes back with a grilled cheese in his hand. And I'm just like, wow, I remember when I was young. And like, remember when you were young? Like, think about right now, listeners. Think about the first meal you cooked on your own. You know? I used to cook grilled cheese. I remember at my daddy's house with American cheese, which I will never touch today.
That's good for you, because I'm like, I'm over here thinking, like, when was the first time I cooked?
I remember that, okay? But that was just a highlight. It was really nice to, like, talk to them. But then when I got off the phone, I was like, okay, I'm going to get off the phone now. I love you guys. And they were like, love you too. And I just love how, like, automatic it is. It's not like a...
No hesitation.
No hesitation. Yes. No silence. It's like, I love you too. Because
exactly.
We do love each other.
Yes.
Cut the noise. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxings, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. K-I-A-N-A-C-O-L-E. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at Kicking It with Key _. I'm going to spell that out for you too. K-I-C-K-I-N-I-T-W-I-T-H-K-I_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
So this week we are going ahead and kind of building on to the part one of the coronavirus episode. And unfortunately, it was brought to our attention that an educator has passed. And what the article basically states, a Bright Star principal who was 36 years old dies from coronavirus. And I'm not sure if a lot of people have kind of have heard about this news article, but essentially there was a article about this educator who was a principal in, I want to say either Brooklyn or the Bronx. I don't remember what borough, but she was in New York.
You know, it's very different. We're not trying to offend New Yorkers. Yes, please.
Just thank you. But like
Brooklyn.
It was Brooklyn? Okay. Yeah. I thought it was Brooklyn. But she was a principal at a alternative school, and she was 36 years old, and she passed from, I believe, complications of the coronavirus. And don't get me wrong, like, I think I have been very in tune with the news and seeing how great of a job I commend Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, as well as Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, as far as their responses to everything. I feel like those were two, and I think that this builds onto what I was mentioning earlier about leadership and the importance of leadership. And I think that we have to have better leaders in positions that depend on the people that support them. Because it's like, if you take that approach as opposed to you just thinking that you know everything, we would be in a better space. And so going back to this woman who passed, it's unfortunate that she passed. And I do question, had the schools in New York, had the Department of Education in New York shut down schools sooner, because if I'm not mistaken, they didn't shut down schools until March the 16th.
They didn't,
Would she still be alive? Like, would the virus had spread to that school or that environment or that community? And I think that that just goes to show that educators are literally on the front line on a daily basis. And let me be clear, like, literally today was the first time I received a notification that Maryland, the state of Maryland is now shutting down childcare facilities. And it's like, why did it take till March the 26th for that to occur?
Yeah, that's interesting. That piece is interesting because I did think about that because I have a coworker who's, when they told us we weren't going to be in school, they were like, oh, I know my childcare provider is going to be open till Wednesday. I mean, I feel like it's kind of tough though. When I think about essential workers and them having children, because I know that at least in a lot of states, like I know for sure in Colorado that like child care facilities have been mandated to stay open, especially the ones that adhere to the needs of people who are essential workers. But it is difficult because like to me in my head, I don't know nothing about taking care of babies, but right. it seems very similar to, at least in terms of conceptually and not spreading a disease, how a school is run.
Right, right.
Yeah, because I know like at childcare places, my coworker Fairfax is telling me that if your child has a runny nose, like they're asking you to pick them up. So yes. It's like, oh, it's interesting that you're staying open, but because I lack the knowledge about their criteria, I just don't quite understand it.
And I think that that's important to note. And I think that that's something that kind of like the CDC, as well as so many other folks that are leading health professionals have kind of been mentioning during this pandemic is if you are sick, the request is that you stay home. But I think in America, right. we have this idea of like what working looks like and what we have a extreme lack of work.
In America, balance. It's like, if you are sick, do you have to stay home? It's a question mark.
Right. Exactly. And I think that we need to do a better job of like kind of changing that narrative. And I think that this is the first time that we're going to have to grapple with that and figure out what does being sick look like, as opposed, and even if it's a runny nose, even if your allergies are not intact the right way, because if you go to work and you accidentally sneeze on somebody, like that, those are germs that are getting on somebody that's going to affect them, that will get them sick. Yeah. And I think that these are conversations that we're not having, but we're having them now. And it's like, it's a little too late. And so to the point of this educator, I just circling back to that, just like,
yeah.
My heart goes out to her family and my heart goes out to other families throughout the country, as well as the world, of people who are passing by way of this virus. And it's because of the fact that we were not prepared. Like, that's yeah. really what it boils down to. Yeah. And enough was not done, and enough still is not being done. And the thing is like, well, I know that we've been talking a little bit about this, but we still aren't doing enough because we're so focused on things that are so trivial. We're focused on grading. We're focused on things that do not matter. Like, we need to make sure that we end this virus as opposed to making sure that students have grades. And I think that there isn't enough thought, like, leaders literally sitting down with the educators to say, hey, like, what do you feel like we need to do in this time? Because let's be real, like, y'all don't know. But at least the thing that you can do is depend, lean on your educators who are on the front line, who do know their students, who do know their families, so that they can have some type of conversation about what needs to be done moving forward.
Yeah. I'm just going to ask that we just take a moment of silence for Des Ann Romaine. She was a 36-year-old principal who passed away in New York. May her soul rest in peace. May her family be able to process these emotions and move forward. May her students and the adults that she interacted with and impacted be able to process and move forward as well.
Thank you for that. That definitely was needed. And so, not to just spin as if the life did not matter, because it definitely, her life was so incredible and we appreciate her for all the work that she did do. But we also want to talk about the school data that we currently have been receiving as of now, just to give an update on school closings. And what we mean by school closing at this point are schools that have currently closed for the duration of this academic year.
State closures.
State closures, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so as far as state closures, we have three states that have closed schools for the duration of this year. And those states are Kansas, Oklahoma, and Virginia. And so in regards to what does that look like? And I think that people kind of had this idea that because states have closed, there's this like overarching plan of what we will do based off of districts. But kind of how we talked about in the public charter versus public school conversation, there could be public charter schools in these school districts and in these states, and there could be public schools, or and we know that there are public schools in these states, and there are private schools in these states.
Yep.
So literally what this means is that there are at least three different entities that are going to be navigating this space however they want to, based off of grading, based off of retention, based off of promotion, based off of standardized testing, based off of, like, there's literally so many different elements that aren't really being talked about or addressed, and that, like, now we're going to kind of have,
because there's so many conversations to be had.
Absolutely.
So many conversations to be had. I know I can just talk about my experience and, like, what remote learning looks like right now. If you follow me on Instagram, you may have saw that the beginning of this week, I did record working from home and what that looks like. And currently I'm taking video conferencing really on any day, but my principal has said that we need to have a mandatory 2 days, so from 10 to 1 on Tuesday and Thursday, kids can sign up to do video conferencing. Now, they were given a distance learning packet. So it's a packet that has like 10 days of work. So they have one sheet that's like it's called a do now. So it's just a review sheet of computational skills. So they might be multiplying decimal numbers or adding or subtracting mixed numbers and fractions. Then they're able to select from a math menu. So there's a menu of like activities that they're able to do. So one of them is essentially just making like math real. So one of them is you have to find two different athletes within the same sport and like describe the stat that you're trying to record and write the numbers and compare the two numbers and decide which athlete is the better athlete based on the stats. So they're able to choose one for the math menu. And then they have the option to, and it's optional for a reason, they have the option to log into our digital platform and work on some of their math skills. Now, that's optional for what you would think would be the obvious, is because we can't ensure that everybody, at least right now, we can't ensure that everybody has the technology that they need in order to access that platform. So it's been really hard because I'm in between a rock and a hard place right now, with a point of like, nothing compares to in-person contact. Like, everybody, most people, I mean, I speak for everybody, learn best with face-to-face contact with someone, actual modeling, being able to ask questions in real time. Versus, at this point, we really just got to create the joy and connection somehow, and we have to teach them somehow in some type of way. So I'm like very, very conflicted because we have the absence of technology. I don't know how many kids, I can't say consistently how many kids I'm reaching. I think right now it's like an average of 16 with the digital platforms that we've been using at my school for years, like traditional digital platforms to contact families. But I can only say 16 out of the 26 kids per class, at least in fifth grade, are actually using that. Then I was on a call with someone from my central office. As you know, I'm at a public charter school. I have 6 schools within my network, and our central office, kind of like the district office that kind of runs everything. So they plan curriculum. So the last 2 weeks, the educators within each school actually created a 10-day packet that we had parents come pick up during a pickup time at schools. Students have been asked to complete the work, hoping they completed it. you know, just going out on a whim here.
Right.
But this next two, so that was 2 weeks. So then on Friday the 27th, that'll be almost like a full 2 weeks. Then next week, which is March 31st, the first day that this podcast will drop through that Friday, will be our spring break. So technically I won't have to do anything. I probably have a little slightly less stress, because it's just been really difficult trying to navigate something that, doesn't have a clear end goal, or like, nobody's really telling me what to do. I'm really having to figure it out. I never read this many articles a day in my life.
Right.
Trying to figure out what the best practices are. So then after that, we have another 2-week packet that our central office is going to create. And our PLC, my professional learning community of 5-6 math teachers across all 6 campuses, came together and decided like what work would be best to match the standards that our central office has suggested that kids work on. it's just been a lot. And I'm sorry if pieces of that didn't make any sense, because it might have gone over your head if you're not an educator. But essentially, there's a lot of moving pieces, and kids are going to be doing more work from a packet. My central office has not decided on a clear system and how to disseminate technology to families that don't have technology. And then there's also families that do have technology. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a computer, but you got three kids and you have a job that you are working remotely. Mm-hmm. So what is the best time for your kid to use a computer? Like, we haven't done any of that surveying. Y'all, I'm not okay.
As you said before.
I'm not okay.
And I think that it's important for us to truly acknowledge that and kind of not accept it, but accept it to understand. And it's okay for us, and it's okay for educators to not feel okay, because I think that this is like, let me be clear. Like, I feel like teacher preparation programs do their best to make sure that you have all the tools that you need to be in the space that you're going to be educating in. But sometimes there are areas in which you just kind of catch a curveball. And this is kind of one of those.
This is a curveball.
This is a curveball, probably is an understatement.
Curveball is an understatement. Like, that curveball is slight right now. Like,
yeah.
I love my university, Howard University. Elementary education. I have some crappy professors, but I also have some really brilliant professors. Absolutely. Shout out to Dr. Jackson.
Yes, Dr. Jackson.
But they wouldn't have never known how to prepare me for a pandemic,
for this,
and remote learning for children in which remote learning is not developmentally appropriate.
Ooh, and I'm glad that you said that to this, though, because I think that although we primarily lean towards the audience of K-12, I think that there is a whole other faction of this conversation that we really haven't been having, which is the university level, the post-secondary education, which is the university level. And the majority of universities were like, oh, pack your stuff and go home. And it's like, what does home look like for people? Like, let's actually have that conversation. Is home down the street or is it across the country? Because as y'all know, Lindsay and myself, we're both from California. So, we had to pack our stuff. But mind you, pack your stuff. Like, had this been freshman year for me, I had a job, but I was like making minimum wage. So, like, what does that look like? Do I need to go buy a storage unit to put my stuff in? How am I going to get it there? How am I going to pay for a flight back home? Like, these are all questions that you have to think about for students. But more importantly, I think the other side of it is if students are going to be moving back, quote unquote, home to live with their families or living with whomever, are professors actually prepared to be teaching and using this distance learning as well?
That's the thing, because my mentor that's based in my field, she is a teacher at Johns Hopkins. She didn't know how to switch her class over to remote learning. And she's the founder of a charter school here. She got her undergraduate degree, her bachelor's, her master's, and her PhD. But she had to spend some time really teaching herself how to do Zoom. Although Johns Hopkins, the school that she works for, did have like some training on it, but she found that wasn't helpful and had to do some research on her own in order to be successful and disseminate information to teachers who now need to disseminate information to kids.
Right.
It's insane.
It is. And it's the thing insane. Is like, and shout out to Ms. Griffin, who is a dear friend, as well as Ms. Powell, who is a dear friend. And because I think that I've been having a lot of conversations with them as well of how to navigate this space and trying my best to whatever resources that I couldn't, and this is why I appreciate y'all so much, because I could not fathom if I were an educator in this space present day. Like, had I stayed in the classroom for one more year and dealt with this type of situation, like, what my response would be. But especially given the fact that I taught special education and that's a whole nother like episode, is the whole response to special education students, which isn't something that's being talked about, is this whole, because IDEA is a law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And literally everything that's stated in that law cannot be met because of the fact that students are not in school. And not because it's just one student, it's because the majority of students are not in classrooms right now. So that's the reason why these expectations cannot be met. And what I mean by that is that these students have IEPs and they get they have present levels of performance. That basically means like how they're currently performing. Are they on grade level? Are they below grade level? Mm-hmm. And what they're actually able to achieve. And then you're giving these students goals. And so the objective of the goal is so that you can fill a gap so that you can get them to where they need to be. But if you aren't teaching them, and if you're only giving them an enrichment packet, and if Congress's stimulus plan doesn't include IDEA in that, how do we expect for these students who have varying disabilities? Because some of these students are nonverbal. Some of these students...
I don't even think about nonverbal students. I don't even have time, brain space to think about nonverbal students.
The first time I thought about it was last year in the classroom was when I had a nonverbal student. How do I respond to this? And administration did not know. And it was me trying to advocate to get the student transferred to a different placement because of the fact that I knew that I wasn't the best. I wasn't skilled enough to be teaching this student. But the student's parents did not know as well.
They didn't.
And so it's like me trying to fill that gap between my administration, who's supposed to know more than me, and the parents who are trying their best to do what they feel like is best for their student. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, honestly, y'all, like what this just boils down to is just like,
we're not okay.
Educators are not okay. And I said this last episode, but like, we weren't prepared then. And so what makes people think that we're prepared now? And I think that that's the conversation that we need to be having. And I think that this is a rude awakening for America. This is a rude awakening for our country as a whole to get our stuff together, because there are a lot of conversations that we need to be having that we have not been having around distance learning, around special education. And I think that even around the special education point, I think that the issue is that we have not been putting SPED students first. And when you put SPED students first, then you have to think about more elements of education in a different way.
You adhere to the most marginalized group and you base everything off the most marginalized group and their needs, everything else falls in place, because something that's going to help our students with special needs is immediately whatever scaffold or modification that you make is going to help the neurotypical child.
Absolutely.
Or the kids that are in the middle. The kids in the middle be getting forgotten the most, honestly.
And it's kind of like the rich and then the poor. It's like the middle class. They kind of just forget about everybody else in the middle. But that's another conversation for another day. But
for another podcast. Not us right now.
I just think that it's very important for us to do a better job of thanking educators for all they have done.
Yeah.
But I want to also talk about the fact that as far as implications kind of go, I know that some people have kind of been hearing about, I talked about earlier about the grading mechanisms that different schools are going to be using, as well as different states. And as of now, it's a show. Like, I don't even know how to explain
it. It's a shit show. It's okay.
I'm glad someone said it.
It's really a shit show now in terms of grading. Let's be very clear. Everybody's familiar with grading. There are some counties, some schools who are still grading. There are a lot of counties who are not grading, right? I know my school in particular is like, let's put quarter three grades in. I actually had to send an email to my principal today because I was like, here, look, as an educator who wants to adhere to the mandates of my leadership, here are the things that I would like to be graded from the distance learning packets that I've passed out. Remember, these are packets that they're review. It's all review work, right? But if you didn't master, like, raise your hand, and you might be in your car. You might be, you ain't at your desk.
Not no more.
You ain't at your desk. Like, there's spaces you're not in. Hopefully you at home right now.
Right.
Raise your hand at home if there is a math concept that you did not understand.
Thank you for raising your
hand. Thank you for raising your hand.
Thank you for raising your hand.
Love that I'm seeing 100% participation right now.
Positive narration.
Okay. Now, I'm raising my hand too. Now, let's say, raise your hand if you also had a teacher that moved on when you didn't understand something.
Woo. I got both my hands up.
Glad I'm seeing these hands up right now. So right now I've given my students work in which I know they have not mastered. I know all of them have not mastered all the work that I've given, just because I know them as people. And honestly, I don't expect everybody to master everything that I get everything that I give within a year. I don't think that's how people work. And my kids know that I operate that way. Like, we are going to learn how to add fractions today, mm-hmm. but remember your goal is to know by the end of the year. So if you don't get it in February, you have until June to try to get it. And if not, somebody will help you next year. Mm-hmm. That's the framing that I give. But I'm thinking about that now. And like, I gave you a review packet. You may not know things. Now I'm grading you on it.
Hmm.
Now I'm being required to grade you on something that I knew that you would fail at.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not fair to me. So I send it to my principal. I say, here are the things, like as an educator trying to support the leader and meet mandates, these are the things that I would like graded. Bam. But as an educator who is serving students and is trying to be ethical, here's a list of reasons as to why I don't think we need to grade for quarter three. And I have 7 reasons. And I don't think it's fair. But it's like, I'm in a between a rock and a hard place where my job is requiring me to do these things, right?
Right.
But my heart, my soul, my passion, the reason why I'm in education to serve students is literally telling me that, first of all, there's a lot of legal issues as to why I should not be grading work that kids didn't get support on.
Right.
My students with IEPs, that's a legal document, y'all.
Hmm.
And I know that Black people and people of color are like, you know, commonly placed into special education. But the silver lining in it is
right.
that you decide, and we'll have an episode on this, you decide what's in that IEP.
Yep.
If it's something you don't like, you ain't gotta sign it. Like, but what the issue is that the system kind of plays on the ignorance of parents and ignorance
mm-hmm.
of people. You can say whatever you want in that IEP. And if you know that it's not getting it done, you can get a lawyer, and there are free lawyers, right? Who, and then take whatever school, whatever entity to court and be like, they're not adhering to the needs that we agreed upon within this legal document. So IEPs actually give Black and Brown people more power. And that is the message that's not being sent out right now. But I say all that to say that my families have these IEPs. They need manipulatives to be worked with. And those are things basically like physical pieces that they can work with in order to complete math problems.
Right.
Some of my kids have 4 hours.
Four service hours?
4 service hours. Pull out.
For what?
Pull out hours.
For what subject? Is it specified?
Just in general, because it's like one of them is behavioral.
Oh, ADHD. Gotcha.
So it's like, there's no way you're getting pull out hours. 4 hours? I think I have 7 kids right now that have IEP needs, and I have 1 inclusionist. There's no way he's able to like reach out to these 7 kids and like maintain all the hours that they need.
Right.
So when we get out of this, I'm just thinking about all the legal issues. But I'm thinking about me personally. So you want me to grade them on work that I knew that they couldn't do when I gave it to them?
Say that one more time, please.
You want me to grade them on work that I knew they couldn't do when I gave it to them? And they don't have the supports that a legal document says that they need to have.
Exactly.
That sounds wild to me.
It is. It is indeed. And I think that that's literally the reason why I shouted out Ms. Griffin towards the beginning of this, is because that's what she's operating under right now. And she teaches in the DMV. And that's the exact question that she's asking herself is, how can I help my students of color? And she teaches bilingual students as well. And it's
Woo!
Like, how, and that's a whole different paradigm.
Ooh, that is.
We haven't touched on like TESOL, teaching English as a secondary language, and things of that nature. But it's just like, how do you make sure that these students are learning when they may be babysitting their siblings? They may be, it does not matter. I think that at the end of the day is that we need to be making sure that these students have the resources that they need. And this distance learning model, this distance learning method is actually solving, it's showing that we have not done enough to prepare to make sure that these students are given the resources that they need so that we as educators can be filling the gaps. But more importantly, so that they can feel confident enough to go on to the next grade and feel as if they have learned and that they can use that metacognition.
Ooh, we got a lot of feedback on that word.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's good. But use that metacognition so that they're able to refer to something when they get to that next grade. And I think that that's kind of the conversation that we have not been having. But I also do want to, I've been trying to like uplift you throughout this episode. I hope that you're feeling
it. I know, because I'm going down.
I'm around, okay? No, but I do have to give you a shout out, though, because I think that is very important when you were talking about the statistics and like the students being able to identify statistics and convert those numbers over. I think we were talking about some type of sport. But I think that is very important because not only are teachers in a predicament where they have to decide, okay, like, what are students going to do? But they also need to make sure that it is applicable to what they see as relevant. And I think that so that's really what we refer to as culturally relevant teaching. Mm-hmm. And I think that if more educators throughout this movement or throughout the country right now were doing this, I think that students, I'll be real, like, I don't know if all the students are going to be able to do all these packets of work that are enrichment activities. I don't know how many parents are going to have the capacity to make sure that their students are doing their homework every night or during the day or logging onto those Zoom meetings to make sure that they go to tutoring. And I don't know what I really do not know what the bandwidth is of parents right now, given the fact that I just found out that 3.2 million people in this country lost their jobs today. Ah! So it's just like, we need to do a better job of supporting our educators. And I think that that's really what we're getting down to. We have to do a better job of supporting our communities. We have to do a better job of supporting our country. We have to do a better job of being prepared. And I know that's what we talked a lot about in the last episode, but it's really integral that we do it.
It's interesting because it's not even like people are saying we have to do a better job of being prepared. Mm-hmm. It's like, the things that could have been set in place don't need to be in preparation for a pandemic.
Right.
Like you mentioned, you listed a couple things earlier, like technology, talking about language barriers, retention, holding parents accountable, appropriate teacher training. Those are things that we just need. Those aren't things that we need for a pandemic.
Yes.
We should have set a foundation. We've had years and years and years to set a foundation to shift mindsets, to grab people into this conversation, to engage in discourse around what we should do to adhere to the needs of the people.
Right.
And we haven't done it. And now we're just, we are just swimming right now in a circle.
Barely treading
because we just didn't set the foundation of, and we didn't complete conversations that we've been needed to have and we've been started. And that's it.
This week's call to action, in addition to you subscribing and passing along the word of the Reformers Pipeline, this is the perfect time for us to tell you how you can help.
You can support educators by sharing and resharing any information about any meal pickup points in your areas. And I would say that it's generally a best practice to stay tuned with the impact of the Rona on the education system. Chalkbeat is a website, a great website for you to visit to stay abreast of all of how coronavirus is impacting systems across the nation. That's where I get most of my information from. The education of current students of the nation will impact our future GDP, as in it will impact our future economy.
Yes.
It's going to impact your life. It's all very relevant, whether you're super aware of what's going on in the education system, whether you have a kid, whether you have a little cousin, all of this is going to impact us on later on. So you can also follow us, MamaLens22 on Instagram and at Hottie Hot on Instagram. Just to stay aware, stay connected.
And also check on your friends, your family, and even folks in your community. We love y'all. Be safe, stay healthy, and hit us up if you need us. Peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!